again, everybody. It's time for the Mainland Podcast, episode number 156 this week. I'm Michael Citro, the founder and managing editor of themainland.com. We are SB Nation's Orlando City, Orlando Pride, Orlando City B website, primarily covering Orlando City SC, but we do touch on all things soccer in the city beautiful at some point or another. Joining me, as always, up in Tallahassee, David Rowe. How are you, Dave?
Conflicted. It was a it started out such a nice day on Sunday for me with Liverpool winning and on top of the table, and then later on that evening it all came crashing back down.
Yeah, I kind of wish that had gone in reverse order for you.
I'm sure you do. I would have rather it just been a really good day all the way through.
Sure you would. So anyway, I have a new sound effect this week for pro referees. Anyway, hope you enjoyed that.
They are scary.
It's Orlando City, of course, falling at home 2-1 to DC United. Very good team, best team in the league so far in the early part of the season. It's a continuation of how they played at the end of last year, and we both picked the correct scoreline in our predictions. We would rather have not done that.
Well, and what I think surprised us both is that we're correct, because I don't think we've ever both correct on the same game with the same score. So it was weird.
Yeah, it's my fault that we were right, because I said in the press box during the game on Sunday, it can't end at this score because this is what I predicted. So, of course,
well,
I had to be wrong about something, so I was wrong about the fact that it couldn't end at that score.
Well, of course, I said the exact same thing at my house here. Surely it won't be this, because Michael and I both predicted this.
Well, it's Chris Mueller's fault. He shouldn't have hit the post.
Okay.
So next time we have him on, we'll have to yell at him a little bit.
Darn you for making us rough.
Just like a Wisconsin Badger, let me tell you. Anyway, yes.
I don't know if I could be mad at him. He's so nice.
he played really, really great.
Yeah.
Just a little bit more clinical in front of goal. And really, the whole team had just been a little bit more clinical in front of goal, a little bit better defending set pieces, and you got to come out of there with some points. But that did not happen. Just 6 minutes in, there's a handball, which I remember a handball that was a lot more egregious that didn't get called just a few weeks ago against New York City. That one was in the box, and now we've got the handball going the other direction, which, I mean, I don't really have too much of a problem with the call, because I've seen lesser handballs called. I've certainly seen handballs of that nature let go, but the ball hit Janssen's arm. It was headed towards the box for a cross. I'm not sure that it necessarily prevented a goal, but it gave them a set piece, and the free kick resulted in a goal as Juan, however you want to say it, he was, for some reason, he's the guy that they put on Steve Birnbaum, pretty much their toughest aerial threat.
That was a little dodgy.
He shouldn't have been on him. It was a mistake in setting up the defense, and I don't know. It was not looking good having him on Birnbaum in any way, shape, or form, and just couldn't handle him. And the defender gets the first goal early in the game, and immediately puts Orlando City on the back heel. But just 2 minutes later, in all honesty, the Lions should have tied it with a Nani header off of a really nice look from Dom Dwyer, and Nani just missed the net. I mean, he just flat out missed a goal right there.
Yeah, and it obviously, like we said, it wasn't the last time that a Lion would miss what should have been, if not an easy goal, a viable goal or chance to score. So it's That was just the beginning of the frustrations.
Yeah, sometimes there just are games like that. There's just games where you either hit the goalkeeper right in the chest, or you miss the net by a little bit, and you're just a little bit off in the finishing.
Or Briere.
And it happens. It happened, as we record this today on Tuesday, it happened to Manchester United today with Romelu Lukaku. Mm-hmm. Missed two that he should have put in. Like, on another day, he would have put both of them in. He didn't put either one of them in, and that's kind of what happened to Orlando. I mean, you had a couple of shots right at the keeper. One was a header from Nani off of a corner kick. Another one, I think, was Dom. And it just wasn't the Lions' night from a shooting perspective. So, you know, you get that first goal set up by the handball call on pro referees. And that would come back again in the 30th minute on a triple play of what the hell just happened. DC didn't come forward very often in the game. They didn't actually have too many dangerous chances in the game. There's one ball that was cleared out, and it went out near the sideline. Dom Dwyer did a nice job of tracking back and defending. He comes and swipes at the ball, misses it. Nice job by Rooney to get the ball out of the way. Doesn't make any contact with Rooney. And Rooney complains to the referee and says, "Referee, you need to call a foul here because I am incensed." And the referee says, "You know what, Wayne? You are absolutely correct. Whenever you are incensed, you should get a foul call. So I'm going to give you that foul call right now, even though I had no intention of calling one just 1 second ago." I'm pretty sure that's the exact wording of what was going on in the field. I couldn't hear it because, you know, I'm up in the press box. There's a glass in the way and stuff. But I would bet that's exactly how that conversation went.
That's what I read when I was reading lips on TV. It was. I mean, it might have been an A or a the off, but yeah, it was pretty much it.
And meanwhile, there was a lot of probably obscenities being yelled by Dom in the background. But there is a ruling there by Armando Villarreal of pro referees that the that it's a foul.
I like it.
It's a foul for because he intended to kick the player's leg. He intended to kick the player's leg. He doesn't have to make contact for there to be a foul call, which is true. But also, if he intended to kick the player with his studs, that player should be issued a yellow card. No issue.
Yes.
No yellow card was issued. So I think this is a little retconning by Armando Villarreal, who said, I probably should come up with a good cover story for why I gave that foul. Intent. Yeah, that's a ticket. For those of you who like old Saturday Night Live. It was a foul. Okay, so now at this point, you still can't be too upset. Okay, yes, you don't want to give him a free kick, but you can't be too upset. So that's the first part of the triple play. Second part of the triple play comes when the foul, such as it was, essentially happened a couple feet from being a corner kick and way out by the sideline, way over by the end line. So naturally, you get to put the soccer ball for your free kick wherever the hell you damn well please if you're Wayne Rooney. Right?
Yeah, if you're Wayne Rooney, you do.
Yeah. So you just go, you know, I don't think I have a really good angle from here. Let me just take this ball a few yards closer to the goal, a few yards further out from the end line, about 7 yards or so from where the original foul took place. I'll just put it right down here. Is that okay, Armando Villarreal? And Armando Villarreal said, of course, Wayne, anything for you, bro. As long as I can have your autograph after the game. And I'm pretty sure, again, that was word for word what these two individuals said on the field.
It's Judge Smiles' rule. If the lie isn't good, you can just, you know, move a little bit until it's better.
yeah.
Another throwback for those of you who've seen Caddyshack.
Yeah, Judge Smiles. Why don't you take a drop ball there?
Take a drop ball.
So Rooney gets it where he wants it, to where he has a better, better look at goal. And so that's strike two. That's the second part of the triple play of awfulness from pro referees. The third part comes on the ensuing free kick, which goes directly into the upper 90 in the back of the on the back side of the goal, while Frederick Briant pile drives Brian Rowe. Now, I will say that Brian Rowe did not He was not going to reach that ball. He's a little short for a goalkeeper. You know, he went up. He kind of waved at it. Didn't get it. It was over his hand. And, you know, the ball was not yet in the net, though, when he was destroyed. Now, I know that you've watched a lot of soccer, Dave. I've watched a lot of soccer.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Isn't it pretty commonplace for an offensive player shoving or pushing any particular player in the box while the ball's in the air? Isn't it kind of commonplace for a foul to be given in that situation?
It is, especially if it's the keeper.
Yeah, now I will say that it's you can make a case that it's not goalkeeper interference if the ball is already past him, but I will also say this. You can't just run into a guy. It's a foul. You cannot just say, you know what, I think I'm just going to Red Rover, let Frederick Briant come run right over Brian Rowe, and I don't think that is how it's supposed to work. So that didn't work. It didn't get called.
What you're forgetting is it was a Wayne Rooney was taking the kick, though.
Well, yeah, and as I looked down and I was I'm a very good lip reader. I remember him going over to Armando Villarreal after that and said, "Hey, don't call that, mate." And Armando said, "Of course not, Wayne. I am for you. I will not call that." And so then they, you know, they went out to the center circle. Villarreal went to the headset, where I imagine the conversation went something like this: VAR. Hilario, don't call me hilarious, Grajeda, called down and said, "Hey, you might want to look at that, because there was a big collision between Briant and Brian Rowe," to which Armando Villarreal, you know, he touched his headset and said, "Yeah, but Wayne said not to call it, so we're going to let that stand, okay? Because we're pro referees!" And,
yeah, that went. Yeah,
and that's what was done was done. I think, you know, the league office probably has the audio of that, so maybe we can get that. We can petition them for that.
Well, it'll probably take 50 years, just like the JFK assassination stuff. So,
at any rate, it's 2-0 at this point, and it's not looking good for the home team. You know, Orlando City did outshoot DC, but really kind of had some, you know, some struggles in the final third, as they've had throughout really the season so far. Went into the locker room down by 2, and they come out in the second half and they just go, "Yeah, we're not going to really have our defenders play defense. Just everybody go in the offensive end." So that's what they did. Everybody went in the offensive end. And you had, I think at one time, Robin Jansen was playing fullback. It was great. It was like Robin Jansen is in the corner waiting for Nani to pass him the ball, and when that happens, hilarity ensues. But because Nani looks at him and says, "Dude, you're center back. I'm not giving you the ball over there." And I'm pretty sure that's how that conversation went as well. You know, around the hour mark, James O'Connor said, "You know what? Enough of this. I am going to send out Chris Mueller and Sebas Mendez. They're going to go out and try to win this game for us. And you know what I'm going to do is I'm going to pull off a couple guys. Let me see. Carlos Asquez hasn't been that good today. So let me pull off Yuri Rosell. And we really need guys on the field that can pass. So let me pull off Sasha Kljestan." This is... So I don't have any problem at all with the people that James sent on. The people that James pulled off were not the guys that probably should have been pulled off at that point. But that's what he chose to do. And, you know, if you looked at me carefully in the press box, you would see over my head in a little thought bubble a thinky face emoji.
With a question mark after it?
Yeah, it's like, So anyway,
what's going on here?
But I will say the energy that Chris Mueller brought to the pitch was instantaneous. And it was significant. And he, just 4 minutes after he was introduced, he put together a play, took a ball from Nani, got to the end line, and just gave Dom Dwyer a goal on a plate, essentially.
Yeah, I mean, he's it was silver platter. "Here, Dom, take this, score." And that was it. I mean, Mueller came on and completely changed the complexion of the match.
He really did. It was amazing. And Chris Mueller made some plays in that game he couldn't have made last year. He was
he was
splitting defenders. He was making plays on the dribble that there's no way he would have made last year. And he, you know, without getting knocked off his feet, it's clear that he's put on some upper body strength. It's clear that he's worked on his balance and working on getting the ball through traffic. Because DC was doing a good job of dropping numbers back and defending and trying to protect their lead and figuring, you know, we'll just get one on the counter, put this game away. They were never able to do that. The few times that they did get out on the counterattack, Orlando defenders did a really nice job to take the ball away or shut down the chance. So, the team did play pretty well. If you, if you just could maybe defend a set piece and maybe put one more, on frame instead of next to the frame, and maybe not get that triple play from Pro Referee, then you got a chance to get out of there against a pretty darn good team with some points, but it was not to be. Orlando, like I said, hit the post in stoppage time on a Chris Mueller header. There was a chance not long after the goal that Dwyer scored when the ball went into a cloud of purple smoke and somehow Dom missed the net. And I still can't find the ball on that replay.
I could not see it, and I thought for sure it was going to go in because I was hoping nobody could see it, and you would think that Dom would know about the dimensions of the goal and he would just be able to put it in, and the smoke would have cleared and the ball would have been in the back of the net and we would have all been cheering, and it didn't. I was actually amazed that it didn't happen.
I think at that point, I think if I'm, like one of the other players, like maybe Rowan could have gone over to Ball Boy, got a ball real quick, and threw it in the net. And, nobody would have known any different because there's a big cloud of purple smoke. They would have just seen the ball in the net and they just assumed that Dom scored,
Right, yeah, he could have gone and done a, backflip and everybody would have assumed and it would have all been good, but
yeah,
it was not to be.
No, it was not. So Orlando City falls 2-1 at home, has not won a game yet this year at home, and has fallen behind at least 2-0 in every home game so far. Granted, I would say that some of the best competition the last couple weeks in the Eastern Conference has come to Orlando City. I think Montreal's a good team, despite what they did at Sporting Kansas City, getting beaten by almost a full touchdown. There was no Piatti in that game, so that was always going to be a tough ask for them to go on the road and win that one. But it was DC is a really good team, and I would say to a man, everyone on that United team probably felt pretty fortunate to get out of there with 3 points.
Yeah, not good, Bob. It was. You're absolutely right. Orlando City completely outplayed DC in the second half of that game. And if it hadn't been for, balls hitting posts and balls going just wide and balls inevitably not able to find the back of the net and purple smoke, I feel that they played well enough, other than on set pieces, ready the sound. Pro referees! So yeah. Other than that, I thought that they played, pretty well, other than those couple things, and it's unfortunate that they weren't able to get any points from it.
Other than that, Mrs. Lincoln, how was the play?
Indeed.
It was not a win. It was not a draw. It was not a result that Orlando City fans wanted, probably not a result that the on-field performance deserved, but deserve has nothing to do with soccer, as we know. I thought it was a fantastic game by João Moutinho. I thought, obviously, Mueller was extremely good. Dom was very dangerous and very active throughout the game. He had some good good passing from Nani. He wasn't very crisp with his finishing, but he was involved with pulling the strings again. Juan with a great offensive game, even though he had the defensive lapse. I'm not gonna fault him for losing their best aerial player. He should not have been on him to begin with. He's probably a foot shorter than Steve Birnbaum,
yeah.
Standing next to each other. So that was just a bad plan all along. I don't know why that, I'm not down on the field, so I don't know how they do it. I don't know if it's something where they line up and then they try to take the closest guy or whatever. But maybe if he'd have gotten a little bit of help, He could have, kept Birnbaum from scoring, but he didn't, and I don't think he should have been making that run with Birnbaum to begin with. That should have been somebody much, much taller. And for my money, what you do on a set piece is you identify the most dangerous targets and you put your best defenders on them. That's what you do. That's what you should do. And that's not what Orlando City did. So hopefully they learned something from this game that will help them the rest of the season, and that won't be a problem again. Dave, James O'Connor was more angry than I've ever seen him since he's taken this job. He finally blew up at the officiating. He's had opportunities to do so before, and I will give him so much credit because he's held his tongue. He hasn't used refereeing as an excuse. He hasn't blamed the officials at all. He's declined when he's been provoked or asked about some really, really shady calls, like the one in Columbus last year, like the offside in LA, at the LAFC game that tied the game that was, to my money, for my money, not a clear and obvious error. It was a very close call, with Miram being offside. Of course, the several calls that went against Orlando City in DC last year, because Wayne Rooney was there, and against New York City FC to start this season, he finally just lost it and said, "Look, this is ridiculous. I've got to protect the players." Part of that is deflecting. Deflecting criticism based on the results so far to start the season. But part of it has got to be genuine frustration at the refereeing. And when you look back and you see that Jason Christ did the same thing, Adrian Heath did the same thing, at some point, you can't just say, "Well, all Orlando City does is hire coaches that complain about the officiating," because that's, I mean, otherwise, you're taking the more complicated of the two possibilities. The simpler possibility is that they're getting the shaft. And I've been to these games, so yes, they're getting the shaft.
Yeah, when you go through a bunch of bad relationships and you're the common denominator, then you don't blame the other people. When you go through a couple different coaches and they all have the same problem, it's not the coaches, it's whatever's causing the problem. And in this case, it's the refs. It's, like you said, it's not that hard to figure out.
So you're saying it's pro referees?
Yes, I was. I just didn't know if you had the sound ready.
It's never far from my hand. Anyway, I will say that it's not the reason that Orlando City lost the game. It's not.
No.
I'm not blaming a loss on the referee. I am merely stating that the referee impacted the game heavily with the triple play of idiocy on the the free kick. And any one of those things could have avoided that goal. Call the
Yeah.
call the guy running into Brian Rowe. Make Rooney move the damn ball where it's supposed to be, or don't call the
Which
foul.
They had... And they had made Orlando City move the ball on a free kick in the middle of the field, not, what, 6 minutes earlier.
Right. That's the thing, is Armando Villarreal had already established himself as, "I'm a stickler. You're going to take the free kick from where I spotted the infraction." So a routine restart at midfield, Orlando City just stops the ball and just tries to play another short little pass, not even trying to go fast and catch DC off. They were just like, "Okay, here, let's restart." And he blows the whistle and makes them move the ball about 8 yards closer to the sideline. It's at midfield. They weren't even going for goal. So he's established already that I'm watching. I'm going to, handle this situation. Where the foul occurred, that's where you're going to take the kick from. And then this happens in an actual scoring position. And he just lets Rooney put the ball wherever he wants to. So, I will say that trio of errors, in my opinion, in the officiating, you can say what you want. If you think that Dom was going for Rooney's leg, that's your opinion. I disagree with you. I had a really good view of that. It was right in front of us. He was sliding toward the ball. Rooney moved the ball. So, of course, he had to adjust where his foot was going to try to get a piece of the ball. He missed it. Did he come close to hitting Rooney's leg? Sure. but he didn't come. He didn't hit it, and I don't think that he was attempting to injure, because from that distance, I think if he wanted Rooney's leg, he was going to get it. I don't think he was going to miss Rooney's leg from there.
No, definitely not. So, and not only that, but you can see his foot swipe at the ball or where the ball was going to be, and then because of his momentum, his foot comes up.
Right. If you kick, here's the thing, and I don't want to. This is to the studs were up crowd out there. What happens when you swing your foot? When you hit the ball, let's say you hit the ball, would his foot been in the same position as it was when it didn't hit the ball? Of course, because that's how feet work. They have to go where you swing them. Your foot doesn't just lock into position and your foot just stops when you kick the ball. There's a follow through. And that's the way that they train, and that's the way that they kick the ball in practice, and it's muscle memory. It's what you do.
Correct.
It wasn't any more studs up than if he had actually got the ball. And the fact of the matter is, him missing the ball is what makes you think it was a studs up challenge. If you watch where he swiped toward the ball, his toe was pointed out, not his studs. So, you know, I disagree that it was a foul. I don't have a problem with it necessarily being called, but the other two elements here are more than enough to make up for that. But again, it didn't cost the team the game. It didn't cost them it didn't cause them to lose the game. It at best, it cost them a point, or at least a shot at a point, because as we always say, goals change games, and you have no idea how the game would have played out at 1-0 at halftime rather than 2-0.
The other thing I was thinking when you were talking about that is, ideally, a referee doesn't do what they're supposed to do. In other words, they maintain the flow of the game so that it's fair and that the rules are followed and all that. However, anytime a referee inputs their own stamp on the game by being inconsistent or, you know, something like that, then they're placing themselves into the game, and they're not supposed to be in the game. They're supposed to be aside from the game, monitoring it and regulating it, so to speak.
Yeah, sounds like your cat needs to go out.
My cat is a special cat.
Anyway, so what do you think, Dave? Your man of the match. We've been talking about this game a long time. Who's your man of the match?
My man of the match is guy Chris Mueller. Like I said earlier, he changed the complexion of the match. He obviously, you know, got that assist for Dom. He had the chance to level everything up there in stoppage. I thought he played one of the best games that we've seen him play, and I'm including the ones where he scored goals early on last season. I think he actually played better despite not getting a goal himself.
I think Mueller was fantastic. I thought so during the game. I tweeted out, I think, a couple of times about how amazing he was. I would say, though, that for me it was a tie. So since you picked Mueller, I'm going to go ahead and give it to the other guy. I'm going to give it to Moutinho, who I thought was fantastic. I thought even late in the game when they were extremely tired, I thought he showed a remarkable amount of hustle to run down balls and to win balls back that were lost. I thought he did a great job of getting some dangerous crosses into the area and helping be part of the attack and facilitate the attack. I think that Moutinho had his best game. I mean, obviously a very small sample size, only a second game, but I thought this is why he was the number one overall pick in the MLS Super Draft. So for me, since it was a tie and you picked Mueller, I'm going to go with Moutinho.
No, hard to argue with that. He did have a great, so I like that pick too.
All right, Dave, we have talked a lot about a loss, and I don't like to talk about losses.
And we know, everybody who listens knows, we don't like to talk about losses as much. If it wasn't for pro referees.
Yeah, so, again, we're not blaming it on the referees, so don't go, I listened to the podcast and they just blamed the loss on the referee.
No,
we're
I'm
not
blaming,
doing that.
I am blaming them for how long we've had to talk about the game.
Yeah, that's true. I will. I think that's fair to say.
Not about the game itself, but how long we had to talk about it.
They are not the reason for the loss. They are a contributing factor to it not being a draw. That's all I'll say about it. Anyway, since I hate to talk about losses, Dave, let's talk only very briefly about OCB's season opener. OCB started a very brightly, Dave, at Montverde Academy against FC Tucson, and those kids looked confident. They looked quick. They looked like they were, you know, not afraid of the situation, not, you know, not overwhelmed by the fact that I think everybody on the field was playing their first pro game or pretty close to it. And going up against an older side, a little bit more seasoned side in FC Tucson, and they looked really dangerous, but they gave up the first goal, and that was on a, it was on a miscommunication. A defender gets beat over the top. There was a little miscommunication between him and the goalkeeper, and it created an easy goal for FC Tucson and made it 1-0. And then the team started to play like a young team, and they started to look like nervous kids after that. And then Mendoza takes a red card, gets sent off, and now you're down a goal and chasing the game, and that's never good. And the Young Lions' first ever USL League One game ends up in a 3-1 loss. Not a good outing, but they did actually control more of the game than Tucson did. They held more of the possession. They had some really good chances, and actually could have had a penalty early in that game. There was a bad back pass by Tucson that was picked up by, I think it was Mbuyo, but I'm not sure. It could have been the other forward, but at any rate, he goes into the box, takes a heavy touch, and the goalkeeper comes out. And then he toe pokes the ball across. He knows he can't beat the keeper from there because he's already taken the heavy touch. Tries to toe poke it across the goal mouth to a teammate, and the goalkeeper bowls him over. So the goalkeeper bowls him over without touching the ball, and I kind of think that's a penalty, but it wasn't given.
Yeah, last time I checked, that was a penalty, but you know. Obviously, we might be wrong about a lot of things that happen in the penalty box this week. So, you know, who knows?
I will say that the USL is officiated by pro referees. I only bring that up so I can play the sound effect again.
and evidently not even the best of the of them, because they're at that level, not at MLS.
Yeah, actually, this particular referee, I can't recall her name, but she actually has done some NWSL games, I believe.
Oh, okay.
I didn't think she was overall poor, but I did think that there were some things let go early in that game on Tucson. There was one play where an OCB player got grabbed and held back, and she didn't call it. And I, you know, sometimes you're like, okay, well, she's waiting to see if they get advantage. They didn't get advantage, but then she didn't call it, and I was like. And it would have given OCB a free kick in a pretty good spot, about, I don't know, about 26 yards, 28 yards out or something like that. And then there, of course, there was the penalty that could have been called. Most people thought that the goalkeeper got a touch on the ball, and I could understand why she didn't give the penalty. She probably didn't see it. Like, in her view, she probably figured that the keeper got the ball. I was watching on TV, and I thought the keeper got a touch on it until I went back and watched the replay and went, he didn't get that. He didn't get that at all. He just got leg. And, you know, maybe if the attempt would have been on goal, you know, a chip or something, maybe it would have been a goal. Well, heck, if he would have chipped the goalkeeper, it would have gone in anyway. But I don't think he had enough room to do it. So, at any rate, it ends up in a 3-1 Tucson win. And we're going to see a lot of these types of games, I think, this year from OCB. They're very, very, very young. It's a developmental team, but I liked what I saw in terms of the confidence and the swagger the team seemed to have, especially early in the game. The fact that they weren't backing down. I think they got physically overmatched a few times by some of the older players, and they made rookie mistakes. I mean, the goalkeeper made a couple of really bad mistakes in that game after some really good moments early. So I think you're going to have to take the bad with the good with this team and hope that they develop and maybe start turning some results around, you know, after they've had a chance to settle in. But OCB now is a USL League One team. They've started their League One season. It's good to get them going out at Montverde. I will mention they were playing without Jordan Bender, who was probably their best player, a kid who played for the MLS side in the preseason, you'll recall, in the Orlando City Invitational. and he was out with a minor knock, but he's, according to Orlando City communications staff, he should be good to go for this weekend.
Well, as we mentioned, USL League One, and all these guys, you know, playing their first professional game. This is not your OCB of old. This is the new, more developmental type, or I should say, even more developmental type squad. So, what we're, you know, results are nice, but what we're looking for, especially in this, is the process of getting these guys moving up the ladder. And anything that does that, including losing games, is a positive. That as long as they're learning from it, like you said, I mean, they came out looking strong. Well, one thing they need to learn is after they, you know, you go down a goal, how do you get back on the horse and keep going?
Yeah, I've got to keep your composure. I thought that, though, that overall there were some positives in the, you know, I will say after the game, I was surprised at how upbeat the coach was. I thought that Fernando Jose de Arguila Irurita, I'm just going to call him Fernando, Coach Fernando.
Coach, I was about to give you kudos for getting the whole name in there. But yeah, Coach Fernando.
Coach Fernando, I thought he was very upbeat after the game. He said that Tucson, he called them one of the strongest teams in the league. He said he couldn't have asked for any more from his kids. He congratulated his kids after the game. He felt like his team had been punished by the referee. There were five yellow cards and a red card for OCB, and only one yellow card for Tucson, and that was on a blatant pullback, a shirt tug to prevent like a 3-on-2 break after a turnover that OCB caused, and they were about to counter, and the guy just went skiing and took the tactical foul and took the yellow card. That was the only one that on them. And he said that, you know, he was happy for them to finally get their debut. They've been working hard, and they finally got a game under their belt. So, you know, it is what it is. You're going to have to deal with it. Oh, by the way, the goal was scored by Kobe Osewusu, and he is now the answer to the trivia question, who scored the first Orlando City B League One goal. Kobe Osewusu.
So good luck remembering that one, yeah, ladies and gentlemen.
I know you'll remember that. Exactly. I know you're going to remember that. So
I'm going to now just because I'll be able to remember you saying it.
Yeah. The Young Lions had, Dave, about 60% of the possession. They outshot Tucson 12-11. Tucson was more than happy, especially after building the lead, to sit back and counter. You know, there was a lot of good. There was just a lack of composure in the final third, much like the senior side. You know, in a young team, you're going to expect that in a young team. So, anyway, so now we have, Dave, discussed Orlando City B and Orlando City. We have not yet discussed the Pride.
No, we have not.
But the Pride is on our mind. The Pride are on our minds. I'm like really having trouble talking tonight. But it's a good segue because that brings us to our guest. The Pride actually won their preseason game against USF, the University of South Florida, 6-0, Dave.
Not FSU.
Not FSU, but you might hear those letters a little later in the program. You know, dyslexia, I don't know.
Or just maybe familiarity with universities in the state of Florida.
Yeah, maybe some unfamiliarity with naming conventions and, you know, that kind of thing. But I will say that a 6-0 win is nothing to scoff at, even if it's against college competition. Rachel Hill with a hat trick in, I think, about 5 minutes or something like that. And wow. So she was firing on all cylinders. Marta scored a goal. And I think Chi scored a goal. So it was big. They bounce back from the 4-0 loss to North Carolina. They get a win. They can feel better about themselves. They can build on that and play the Puerto Rico Soul this weekend at the stadium. You can get your tickets now. I think that's a free game. I think you can just get tickets for free.
Well, and before we poo-poo a 6-1 result against USF. Let's not forget that the Pride, and it with a whole lot of trialists, did lose to FSU last preseason. So, there is quality soccer in the state of Florida at the college level. So, anytime you can get a win and get the positives from that, that's something to take home.
Why are you giving them a goal? They didn't score a goal.
6-0. No, sorry.
6-0.
I'm thinking because I was thinking about last year's Pride versus FSU, which
don't
I think
take
was,
the,
if I
don't remember. Don't be taking the clean sheet away.
All right, 6-0.
You know, don't be doing that. That's not cool. That might be done by pro referees instead of.
Don't ever compare me to them again.
Yeah, it's not something that you would get from the likes of us. You know, that's not.
I freely admit that was poor form.
If it happens again, Dave, I'm just warning you.
Area.
Anyway, let's find out more about the Pride. Why don't we do that?
Yeah, let's. Is there anybody we can talk to?
Yeah, I think we're going to do that right now. We're going to talk to our special guest about the Pride. So let's go do that right now. All right, joining us this week on the Mainland Podcast, very happy to have with us the new head coach of the Orlando Pride, Mark Skinner. Mark, thanks for being with us on the podcast.
No, thank you for inviting me. It's really important to be kind of touch base and being so important to the club. It's good to get on and have a proper conversation.
Well, Mark, you are getting ready to start your first NWSL season, and one of the things you said when you were introduced by the club and also what you said at Media Day was that one thing you really needed to do was to get to know who your players are and what their capabilities are. Now that you've had a few weeks of preseason, how close are you to learning who these women are and what they can do?
It's a really good start and question, because I think I've had long enough to get the initial parts done and get to know the girls. I call them girls because we're that close, but the women, I get to know them quite well so far, and I've been really, really impressed with what I've seen. I think when you come in, you're a little bit apprehensive about what you can achieve in such a short amount of time and so on, but just meeting the girls and how much they want to learn and how much they want to achieve and their ambition, I think it kind of matched mine. So I think I've been pleasantly surprised with just the speed in which they want to take things on board. And look, things take time, of course they do, but their attitude of the girls to want to learn and be better, I genuinely couldn't have asked for a better environment to set up. It's been pretty easy to get them on board with what we want them to do, and look, we're starting to build the foundations of something that we can hopefully make special in the future. So I've been really, really pleased with their attitude and their response to how we've asked them to play, and just look, these are good people, and that's what I wanted to find out first. There isn't one person I've met where I thought, could you be a team killer? There's not one person. They're all people that want to help each other, and that's shown from the off.
Now, obviously there's, challenges for you coming in, being the new coach. You've got, veterans, you've got younger players. And then, of course, new system and all that. What do each of those, the veterans versus the younger players, newer players, those who've been around, what all is everybody bringing to the table to get your vision onto the field?
I think the veterans come with experience, and that means experience can either be good or bad. It can be good or bad habits over a longer period of time, or it can be something where the newer players or the younger players don't have that kind of experience, and you're asking them to do things they've potentially never done before. So the one thing that we've had, I've got people like Ashlyn, Alex, and I look at Ali Krieger, and I look at these people and think, these people have won World Cups. So the valuable information, the leadership styles, that they can bring is has been fantastic, because they're very inclusive. So regardless of age, I think one of the things that we said when we first came in was that regardless of your kind of experience within the game and your stature within the game, as long as you're a good person, you'll help each other. Then it goes into the game the other day where we've got our new girls playing with, you know, players like Marta, you know, that players like, even, you know, we look at Sydney, who has been training in and out, and the leadership, even today, this morning, she was leading one of the you know, the rookies in how she wants her to play the ball up to her, how she should calm down in possession, how she's got support. So I think if you give people the opportunity to lead without controlling the group, you know, that there's a level that you can lead to. I think you give them a voice, and I'm certainly going to give the experienced players we have a voice, because their knowledge is invaluable. And then you flip on to the younger players, and you have people like Bridget Callahan, who was here last year, who, believe it or not, she is a bigger character than most people, and she brings that to every training session. And I think that they've actually managed to marry that pretty well so far. And I'm trying to work out the secret ingredients at the minute as to how that has worked for my own benefit. But I think it's good people. And I think once you set an environment where everybody feels valued, not just the most experienced, you give everybody a chance to have a voice. I think that, you know, hopefully we'll create something special. That's the plan.
Mark, one thing that we've seen is, you know, from the two preseason fixtures that we, you know, we have the results from, is, you know, obviously there's a different level of quality between North Carolina Courage and South Florida, the college team. But what did you see from your side in terms of how much they were able to learn from that North Carolina game and apply in the second game?
The North Carolina game probably came a little bit too early in kind of what we were trying to do. I think the goals we gave away against North Carolina were not good enough in our opinion. The girls spoke straight away afterwards about the fact that we kind of gave the game to North Carolina. They didn't really have to earn it, and that's something that we're going to make sure we look at, that we can stop in the future. I think when we played FSU, they were very physical, and that gave us a great chance to work against a very fast press. And look, we're going to try and play, and we're going to try and dominate the ball, and we're going to try and use it to manipulate the opposition. So I think the two varying styles of the teams, you know, North Carolina, very physical, very direct, very good players, individual qualities that can bring, you know, games to life. And I think they showed the ruthless side of the NWSL. And that's where I think we need to make sure we don't have a soft underbelly when we're going forward, and we learn from, you know, those results. But the greatest thing that I could take from that picture was that as soon as she came off the field, the players weren't despondent. They wanted to get back on the field and play another 90. They wanted to right the things that they hadn't done in that game and put them right. And I think you saw that a little bit towards in the FSU game. Although the level of the opposition, you know, was obviously different, I think we saw a kind of backbone to the team, which is what we're trying to get into them. I think at times last year, we probably gave up results too easily. And that's something that we can't afford to do, especially in a ruthless league like the NWSL, where, you know, you give chances away and people are going to punish you. So I learned that they took the playing philosophy a little stage further in the next game. And, you know, again, we've got a game this week where I'm hoping we take it another step. But what would be great to see is we're actually starting to play with some of the girls that would be here when, you know, our World Cup players, you know, go off to experience that. So it was good to see the balance of all the things we're doing with all of the team in one game. So I was pleased with their progression. Again, it's one of these. Pre-season is two steps forwards, one step back. It has to be, because you have to go through a learning process. But I'm hoping the North Carolina sticks in their memory. But if it does, then it will give us something to drive towards. You shouldn't see a negative result like that. You should be unhappy with it. You shouldn't fear it. And I think that's what we took from that game into the FSU game.
Now, you mentioned the World Cup. Obviously, you're going to have a bunch of players that are going to be away for that competition. Obviously, there's other teams that will as well. But what are the challenges of having players come and go like that during a season, especially your first season with the club?
I think it'll be a really strange experience. If you look at, I've never, you know, in England there'd be a break for the World Cup because obviously the seasons run at different times, and I think I've never experienced that, where you take a big proportion of your team out and the experience that they have, and you know, you miss them for potentially what could be up to like 10 to 12 games. So it's really important that we have a balance, and that's why I've been trying to work on the whole team rather than just the individuals. It's almost like three seasons. So we've got the first four games, then our players go away for the World Cup, and then we've got a block of potentially up to 10 to 12 games, and then we've got the rest of the season when they come back. So we're trying to prepare differently. We're looking at our options as well as to how we prepare, bringing in players, reinforcements. But the one thing you have to be very aware of this year is that you don't want to bring players in that are not going to have a future with your team, just to kind of, you know, put aside for a year as makeshift players. I think what we owe to this club is to build a legacy and to put a team together that, you know, the fans can be really, really proud of. So no doubt it's going to be a challenge, and it's something that we have to make sure we coach, we ensure we enforce, but also we support the players. Look, some of these players are younger, they're going to make some mistakes, but if they feel supported, then they're much more likely to grow within this environment. And you know what? What a great challenge. You can look at it two ways. You can look at it, you're going to lose all of these players, or you can look at it, it's what a great challenge for the younger players of, you know, who's the next name for Orlando? And it could be welcoming within this group. So that's our job, I think. I think the lens that you look at it with is really important. I'm going to choose to look at it as a great opportunity for the players to show who they are, really, and without the shadow of the brilliant players that we have in this team. So it's going to be a good challenge and something that we're definitely looking forward to and relishing.
Mark, you have two players that you had a hand in selecting for this year, Aaron Greening and Marissa Vigiano, the college players from the draft. We haven't got a chance to see them yet. Obviously, the fans haven't yet. Is, you know, can you just give us an update? Are they holding their own? Do they look like they're NWSL quality players and that they're going to make this team and not only that, but contribute in 2019?
Well, I'm hopeful that you'll see them at the weekend. So if you're popping down to the game and you're coming to watch, I think you'll get to see them play. But they're more than holding their own. We identified, you know, in my previous team, we had to look for the kind of the signs of the next player, the next talent, the things we could work with to improve. And I think that if you look at Erin's physicality, her ability to break lines, her speed, I think you have a player that could for sure put herself in contention to be an NWSL player in the future. And Marissa, with her brain and the way that she played between lines, was something that most coaches wouldn't look for in this league, because obviously it's a physicality league. So she has the ability to break lines, to play through gaps. Look, I'm really excited for these two players. And you know what more than a better year for them to try and see where they're at, where they pit themselves against NWSL players, because I believe in any player that comes and plays for Orlando, but these two ladies have a good chance.
Now, we've talked about the challenges of the World Cup, and obviously, you know, your first season, players in, players out, new players. Given that, and given the high expectations for this Orlando team, despite the disappointing results from last season, what do you consider a successful 2019 season?
It's hard, because people ask me this question, and they say, you know, what targets do you set for the team? I genuinely mean this. Our aim is to try to win every game. Like, I need to add context to this, because obviously if people listen to the podcast, I think that we have to ensure that we're competitive in every game. That doesn't mean I'm saying we're going to win every game. That means that we have to go into every game and give it the detail it's needed in order to give us the best chance of winning. Now, we have a formula that we believe is performance over results, because I think that you can get a result and it can look good, but whereas if you perform well consistently, you have a better chance of getting a consistency in results. So I think that we're going to go into every game at my old club, and we'll do the same here. We call them events. So each event or each game will have a title for the players. So their focus is solely on the game that they're about to undertake, and they don't look a stage ahead or a stage behind. I think that's really important, because players can lose focus at times, especially if, you know, you're playing a Portland in a big arena with lots and lots of fans. And so for me, it's focus on what we can control, what we can achieve, and so that's why when I say it, we are looking to be competitive and try to win as many, if not every, game that we play. And although people might say I'm a little bit of a dreamer in that, I understand the level of the end of this out. There are some fantastic teams and the world's best players, but that doesn't take away from the fact that if we win, I'm never happy. If we draw, I'm not happy. And if we lose, like, of course I'm not happy. So my job is to always find ways to be better, regardless of whether we win. If we won every game and the championship, I would still not be happy, because we can do it better. So for me, the target is to try and be competitive and win every game. Where that ends up at the end of the season, if we can perform well, will be a true reflection of the team that we've produced in the first season.
Mark, before we let you get out of here, just a couple wrap-up questions. The first is, you know, you discussed Sydney LaRue earlier. Is there an opportunity for her, do you think, to get some games in at the end of this season after, you know, she delivers? And I know that's a tall order to get back into playing shape, but, you know, have you had those discussions with Sid?
But I mean, look, if there's one person that could do it, it's Sydney. You know, she's such a strong character and such a good player. Like, we will, of course, miss Sydney in the time that we won't have her. But the first and foremost, we obviously at Orlando want to wish her the best with the birth of her child. You know, I'm sure she's going to have another wonderfully charactered, beautiful child. And then after that, look, if Sydney's body is you know, can repair itself and she can get back, we will absolutely support Sydney being back as soon as she can, as long as she's safe, as long as she's healthy, because why wouldn't we want her back on the field? So I think we'll just plan it as it happens. I know Sydney in her head, she's got four to six weeks plan after the birth to kind of get herself fit and ready to go, but if she's back before then or after then, we'll wait, we'll support. And you know, she's going to be a vital part in the run-up as well. While she's heavily pregnant, she'll be a vital part, help educating the younger players. And being a mother in this team is so, so important, because her experience and qualities can be spread across the rest of the team. So there is no time limit on it. If she comes back sooner, brilliant. If not, as long as she's healthy, we're happy to wait.
Obviously. Mark, one last question. You know, the club was able to acquire an international slot, free up another one with Camilla getting a green card.
Yeah.
You know, are we going to see those used when the European season ends?
That's the aim. We are looking across to bolstering certain areas, and that's why we have to be patient. I think that we have our targets. Just because we've not particularly been active, I don't think many NWSL teams have been that active. Especially abroad. So we're going to make sure we select the right people. We are currently looking and we are currently identifying targets, and we're hopeful that we'll bring one, if not two, in the future. But as you say, there's a European league still happening at the minute, so we are identifying those, we're finalising those, and as soon as we do, we'll obviously let you know when we're able to we'll update you on the status of that.
All right, Mark Skinner, thank you so much for being with us, the Orlando Pride's new head coach. Good luck to you this weekend in the final preseason tune-up, and good luck to you in your first NWSL season.
Thank you very much, guys, and keep up the great work, and I hope to be on very soon in the future.
All right, a big, big thanks to Orlando Pride head coach Mark Skinner, who was fantastic guest, Dave, and we just need to turn around his cue cards so that he can see that it's USF instead of FSU.
That's correct. You know, next year they'll end up playing SU, and we'll have corrected him, and then he'll say USF, and we'll have to do this all over again.
I'm here for it. I am here for that. I'm here for him calling Florida State USF. That will be hilarious to me.
We'll see. Right now, this year, it's hilarious for me.
And big thanks to Jackie Maynard, who
Absolutely. Is
awesome at her job, for hooking us up with that interview.
She's one of the best people. You probably don't know, she's one of the best.
Which means she'll probably leave.
Ugh, don't do that to us.
All the best people leave. I mean, Jamie Chin left, and Lenny, and Jackie Ramos, Rafa Cabrera. So we don't want that to happen anymore. Stay here. Be our pal. Be our PR person.
Just tell us what we have to do, Jackie.
Yeah. And we'll do it if it doesn't cost us any money.
That's right.
Anyway, again, thanks to Mark Skinner. And I think that Mark will be successful. I don't personally think it will be right away. I think that this might be a little bit of a rough year with, I don't know, I just don't look at the roster and I see that the players that are going to be gone and how heavily they've been relied upon in the past, and maybe I'm a little bit colored by the past of this team a little bit, but I just don't know that the other players on this team can step up and perform, and some of these other teams in the NWSL are not going to lose that many players to the World Cup, so it's going to be a very difficult season, I think.
Sure, but because of that, I mean, that's the best possible scenario for him for a first year, because of the World Cup and of the players that he's losing for it. If things don't go great, people already have the excuse for him. Like,
well,
he doesn't
yeah.
have to put it out there. People are already going to give him more latitude because of all that.
Let me introduce you to a
hashtag. To fans?
Let me introduce you to how the world works, Dave. By game three, there'll be Skinner out hashtags on Twitter. I guarantee you this, unless they're winning.
That's because people suck.
Yeah, despite the fact that they have a very difficult schedule to start the season, I think there'll be some Skinner out hashtags if things are not going well. But I don't necessarily...
Are you saying that the internet is not a kind and just place?
I'm saying it's not a patient place. especially Twitter Twitter and Facebook especially are places for people who, if they go through the drive-through, they want to be digesting the food by the time they pay for it.
Okay.
They want their chicken nuggets need to be in their stomach as they're pulling their wallet out.
So basically, they want their chicken nuggets fed to them as if they are a baby bird.
Right. They're going to be like, you know, throw it in my mouth as I drive through at 20 miles an hour and have my...
Throw you the dollar.
No, they don't throw dollars. They just wave their phone out the window with Apple Pay, and it just ding.
Right. Okay.
You know, they don't even want to slow down. So, I mean, yeah, this is the world we live in today.
Having said that, make sure you follow us on Facebook and Twitter.
Exactly. We're not proud. We're not a proud people. The race of podcasters is not a proud race. we don't have a long history of pride and, you know, whatever. Anyway, you could actually write to us if you want to. On that same internet, you can write to us. You can follow us on Twitter, and you can ask us literally anything that you want to ask us. Doesn't even have to be related to the sport of soccer or sports in any way. It could be about the final season of Game of Thrones coming out soon. It could be about the Avengers Endgame movie that has not yet been released.
Tickets are now available.
You can ask us what happens in Avengers Endgame right now. Like, while we're talking, like, you could send that tweet right now, and we would tell you how it ends. And
guarantee we have theories on that.
Yeah, it would be probably wrong, but we would try.
Oh, yeah,
anyway,
yeah,
there's a couple ways you can ask us questions here on the podcast. You can email us at themainland@gmail.com. Don't forget, themanland. Maine like a lion's mane. themainland@gmail.com by email or on Twitter. We are at the mainland, so at us, please. At the mainland. And, of course, hit us up with the hashtag AskTMLPC. And, just one item of note while I'm thinking about it. We're going to change platforms, but it should not affect anything on your end. So if you're a subscriber, once we change platforms, which we expect to do before next week, you should still capture the podcast the same way you always have. But just in case you get through mostly next week and you haven't gotten your podcast, please go look for it on iTunes, because it should still be there. And you might have to resubscribe, but you shouldn't have to.
Or just Stitcher, or wherever you listen to it. And if you still can't find it, at us on the Twitter and let us know so we can help you out.
And it'll always be on the website. It'll always be at themainland.com. And there's always money in the banana stand.
There is money in the banana stand.
I have no idea why I just thought of that, but I said it, so it's out there for the world.
Have you been rewatching Arrested Development on Netflix?
No. I had a bad week, and
Yes, you did. You did have a bad week. You had a bad week the way I had a bad week in November.
Yeah, I had a rough week, and I decided that if life hands you lemons, you should ask for more lemons so you can open up a produce stand, because there's good money in produce.
There's good money in produce.
And that's
all you really need is a truck with stairs on the back of it.
that's why I thought of Arrested Development. Anyway, let's get to our mail, Dave. We don't have a lot so far. Maybe by the time I read this email, we'll have some more in Twitter. But I know we got a question from friend of the podcast, Lee Gavlik.
All right, Lee.
Lee would like to know, boy, this is a long email. The topic of controversial calls against Orlando City has truly been evergreen amongst supporters since their MLS debut, and this week's game has obviously done nothing to snuff out that fire. Boy, you said it, Lee. You two have discussed some sort of a compare and contrast style documentation involving any massive game-changing calls, both for and against the Lions, to see how things stack up. And perhaps you even will on this week's episode. Allow me to get things started, at least on one side of the ledger. In the erroneous calls that made a huge impact or huge difference in the game for OCSC since 2015 column, I can actually only think of two examples. One, 2016 against Toronto FC, where Julio Baptista went down quite easily in the box in stoppage time, leading Kaká to score a game-winning penalty in, like, the 178th minute. And I think it was that much. I think it was the 100th minute. And two, last season against Portland, where, let's be honest, Dom was gifted a penalty, converted by Kleshnon on shoulder-to-shoulder contact in the box. Am I missing any to your recollection? Thanks, guys. Have a great show. Lee, let me educate you, my friend.
Go for it.
I'm not talking about questionable calls. I'm talking about obviously incorrect calls. And I will go to my grave, I will fight you, whatever it takes, but I will never in a million years see either of those fouls as clear-cut incorrect calls. Guys go down easily sometimes, but one thing you have to remember about Dom Dwyer, for all the diving he does do, and he does do some, Dom is not a large man compared to the defenders he goes up against. And if you watch that play against Portland again, it's pretty clear there was heavy contact. Whether it was shoulder to shoulder is a matter of opinion, really. But there's no reason for him to be run over there. There's no reason at all for there to be that kind of contact in the box. And Portland got a penalty in that game. So most referees, being human beings, even though they are pro referees, they're going to find an opportunity to give one back the other way if the opportunity presents itself. Maybe Dom took advantage of that. Maybe he didn't. Maybe he just went down under contact, which is understandable. I am a person who is, I would say I'm probably an inch shorter than Dom, but not too far different in height than Dom. And I would say that I would have gone down under that much contact. Now, that could be because I'm not a world-class athlete, and it probably is, but
probably.
I don't see that one as a clear cut. I'm talking about like the phantom contact in the Columbus game. I'm talking about the chicken wing arm sticking out by Maxime mm-hmm. Chanot. These are not controversial at all. These are quite clear cut, and the rules are quite easily understood about these. And I will say the same thing about the thing about the Toronto game you talked about. I was at that game. I was actually right behind that goal when that play happened. And yeah, he may have gone down a little soft, but a soft foul is still a foul. I'm just talking about, like, if there was no contact and he fell down and they give him a foul, that's what I'm talking about. I'm talking about game-changing calls that are clearly wrong. Not a matter of opinion, not iffy, not could have gone either way. I'm talking about there's no way in hell that should have ever been called. And neither of those fits that, in my opinion. So, Lee, you're a friend of the pod, but an email like this makes you really, really get on my bad side, my friend. What did Peter Griffin say? That really grinds my gears. Grinds my gears. But no, in all seriousness, Lee, yeah, you're all right. We like you. You're a friend of the pod.
Yeah,
but I just disagree completely about those calls. They're not what I was talking about. What I was talking about is massive game-changing calls that are just blatant. Like, I mean, like if there's no, like, for example, if what Will Johnson did in the Atlanta game, remember the Atlanta game when everybody threw all the crap on the field?
Yep.
Okay. So let's say Will Johnson does that in the box and they call and they give Orlando City a penalty, and you can clearly see on the replay there was no contact. That's not even a judgment call. That's just a call that was clearly incorrect. That's the kind of call I was discussing on the podcast before. So
maybe there was intent.
Yeah, I clarify for all to hear right now that that's what I was talking about on the previous podcast. I wasn't talking about 50-50s. I wasn't talking about questionables. Could go either ways. That kind of call is really what the Rooney call was from this week, right? It's like, okay, you could see why it was given, but mm-hmm. I don't agree with it, but okay, whatever, it's a foul. And I think that's what those other ones were. I mean, we're talking about like ball into Servando Carrasco's chest territory. That's what really is what Orlando City has been sort of victimized by. You can go in that same game. You can set that same game and say, okay, Kevin Molino had a handball before that, and you'd probably be right. You know, I wouldn't have had a problem with that. I wouldn't have had a problem with it. But that is another one where, unless you have a really great view of it, you're not seeing it and calling it. On the other hand, if you have a very clear view of a ball hitting a guy in the chest and you call it a handball, that's just negligence. I mean, that's not even negligence. That's malpractice. I'm getting wound up. Let's move on.
I was about to say, do you feel better?
Do you have anything you want to add, Dave?
I don't think I would do that to the listeners to add anything onto that, honestly. That you've covered it pretty well there, my good sir. And okay, Let's just say that, yes, it would be great for one of us to do a deep dive article, and it would really need to be an article. Obviously, we could talk for hours about that. If we went and did the research, there would be an entire podcast. So I don't know that it'll be me, but if the reason I say it, it's going to take a lot of going back and looking at a bunch of history and game. I mean, having to look at every single game to find all of these instances and then compare it and contrast it, and that's a lot of work for an article. Yeah. And
well, those are the kind of things that stick out in your mind. And the fact that I can't think of one that was just glaringly wrong is I think speaks volumes. When I can remember, yes. You can remember six or seven that were glaringly wrong the other direction, but you can't remember one that was glaringly not. I'm not, again, not a 50-50, not a matter of opinion. Just right. Like there was no contact, or you know, the guy just tripped over his own feet or whatever. You know, that's the kind of thing that I'm talking about. I don't necessarily let's move on. I'm getting irritated. I've had a bad week and I'm getting irritated, and I don't want that to happen.
It's really grinding his gears.
Yeah. It's I was over the officiating after arguing with Ridge Mahoney on Twitter a couple of days ago or a day ago about the call, and I was, you know, Dom put like posted an April Fool's tweet with video of the foul call, and
yeah, I thought that was hilarious.
And Ridge replied to him, attempting to kick a player as a foul. And that rubbed me the wrong way, because it's like, now you're basically telling the guy who actually, the only person in the entire universe who actually knows what Dom Dwyer tried to do, you're telling him what he meant to do.
Yeah, that's pretty ballsy.
Yeah. So I stuck my nose in there and we had a discussion, but I was just like, you know, don't try to tell the guy what he meant to do. He knows what he meant to do. And maybe he did mean to kick him, but again, I've seen Dom Dwyer enough to know that if he tried to kick Rooney, he probably would have kicked him. He wasn't far off. I mean, he could have done it. I don't think he was going to try to just barely clip him. If he wanted to take him out, he'd take him out.
Well, and I'll go back to video. His foot would not have gone to off and to the left. Going to JFK this, off and to the left.
Please don't.
Oh, God. Yes, you're right. We never quote anything on this podcast.
Plus, it's back and to the left.
I couldn't say that. It wasn't back.
Well, you know, you can't just misquote.
You take liberties, dang it.
No. Quotes have to be pretty close to exact. Anyway, we move on. Dave, have we got anything in the Twitters this week?
Let me double check the Twitters. We didn't earlier, but we'll give it one last shot right now. No.
All right. You missed out. You snoozed and you lose.
So, but what we are going to say is, those of you listening right now, get us the questions on the Twitters, at the mainland, hashtag AskTMLPC. Set us up for next week so that I'm not asking mid-podcast.
Yeah. Write to us. The mainland at gmail.com if you want to follow Lee Gavlik's example of writing to us by email, but don't rile me up like Lee did.
You can rile him up. It's okay.
I got, you know, I'm not a young man anymore. My heart's only got so many ticks left in it.
We're not going to censor anybody.
I'm not talking about censor. I'm not talking about censor.
No, I'm just saying.
Anyway, however it happened.
Be kind to the old men of the podcast.
Yes. Let's move on. This is getting into silly territory, even sillier than normal. Dave, the U.S. women are playing this week. It's going to be an international break on the women's side. The women play Thursday and Sunday, I think. And the big game, of course, from an Orlando Pride perspective, is the U.S. versus Australia on Thursday night at 9 p.m. Eastern Time. You're going to see Alana Kennedy. You're going to see Emily Van Eggman. You're going to see Alex Morgan. Perhaps Ashlyn Harris, but probably not. And maybe even Allie Krieger in her 99th ever cap.
That would be pretty cool.
Yeah, that would be cool. So we'll see. We'll see if that comes to pass. And, of course, they will then play Belgium at 9 p.m. Eastern on Sunday. I think those times are correct. They were when I wrote them down, but sometimes they change those. And I usually write them on the schedule, like, right when they're announced. And then every once in a while, U.S. soccer changes the start time, sometime between the time they're announced and the time that they actually are played. So then at that point, it makes me feel like I'm wrong. But I'm looking at the USSF page right now, and they both still say 9 p.m. Eastern time.
I did ask them the other week when they do change those times. It is specifically to make you look bad, so just know that.
Okay. Well, you know, I don't need their help.
No, but they're thinking about you, I guess. That's the point.
I'm just saying, I don't need their help to look bad. I am plenty good at that all by myself.
Anybody that listens to the podcast knows that we make ourselves look bad real quick.
Yeah. All right, Dave, we're going to get out of here, but first let's talk about Orlando City's week ahead as a club overall. Of course, the OCB, the Young Lions, hosting Toronto FC 2 on Friday night the 5th. And Sean should have a recap for that. We will be out at the Purple Palace on Saturday for Orlando City against the Colorado Rapids at 7:30 p.m. Rapids have had a rough start to the season like the Lions have, and that is a chance for Orlando City to pounce and maybe get a win and feel good about themselves and get that first home win out of the way for 2019. And then Sunday, the Pride at 5 o'clock at home against Puerto Rico Soul, 5 p.m. Eastern Time. I think our Scott Carnival will be out there, and he should be there for the recap of that one and some live tweeting. So follow us on Twitter this week, and you're going to get some live tweeting of – should get live tweeting of all three of those games on the mainland Twitter feed. So if you can't make the games and you got your phone and maybe you can't listen or watch or stream, whatever – you know, we got you covered. Just open Twitter and just keep it, you know, keep refreshing, and we'll take care of you. We'll tell you what's going on.
Be happy. It's a busy week.
Dave, the PIDs are coming to town. What's your key matchup against the PIDs, and what is your final score prediction?
Alrighty, against the PIDs, it's going to be, I'm going to stay consistent again. Defense versus Juan Camara, and recent home history. As we mentioned, going down at least two in home games and then trying to claw our way back. That is something that has to be stopped and not continued and broken in any other way you want to put it. But the Lions have to figure out a way to quit going down by multiple goals at home. So key matchup, the defense, because that's who keeps those guys scoring against recent history, and Juan Kai Kamara, because as we know all too well, Kamara seems like scoring goals against the Lions. As for prediction, I'm going to go with the until they prove they can do it. Not going to give them benefit of the doubt. It will be a 2-2 draw with the Lions going down 2-0 and clawing back for the 1 point.
All right. Interesting stuff there, Dave. I'm going to say my key matchups. I'm going to have two key matchups. One will, of course, be the defenders against Kai Kamara. Kai Kamara is a jerk. He'll be a jerk again on Saturday, and he'll probably score a goal. But Kai Kamara, he's the guy to watch. He's had some success against Orlando City. He likes to play against Orlando City. He is not shy about taunting Orlando City fans. Like I said, he's a jerk. So the defense against jerk is my one matchup. My second key matchup of the game is going to be Orlando City's attacking players against the goal frame. Stop hitting the post. Beat the post. Beat it on the inside, and you've got yourself a game. You got yourself a win. So that's a key matchup. If you can get that ball inside the frame rather than outside the frame, it's going to be a lot easier to win the game.
So you're saying that makes all the difference in the world.
And that makes all the difference. Yes, I am saying that, and I'm going to be in a rare form of optimism. I'm going to be the optimist here and say 2-1 Orlando City is my prediction. I'm going to say the jerk gets a goal, and then Orlando City says F that and gets back in the game and scores two goals to win.
Wow, this is a week of firsts. Us being right about the score last game, and then Michael going on and being positive. I don't know what to make of all this. It's really strange.
I don't know what to do with my hands. No, I mean it's just time. I'm not trying to be positive here. I don't think the Rapids have been very good at all this year, and so
they haven't.
I think this is the week we're going to find out, is Orlando City actually better this year, and these results with, and you know, we've had Andrew Sharp look at expected goals, and it seems to indicate that Orlando City is doing better this year, or is it just another year of disgusting, awful loss after disgusting, awful loss. And it could go either way at this point, I think.
Well, you're not wrong. It could go either way.
Yeah.
We'll find out. Hopefully, you are correct this week, and they do indeed get the win, mm-hmm. and that I am wrong this week. Once again, as we often say, I will be happy to be wrong on my prediction.
So the Lions and the Pids, they both played 5 games. Lions are 1-2-2 with a -2 goal differential. 8 goals conceded, but 6 scored. The Pids, my friend, the Pids are 0-3-2. They have scored 6 goals, like the Lions. They have allowed 12 goals, and they are -6 on the season in the goal differential department.
Yeah, no, they're not good, but...
They're coming in at 0.4 points per game. Orlando City right now is right on 1 point per game. And honestly, they were seconds away from beating Chicago. They were a horrendously not called handball against potentially beating New York City. And they've played probably their two toughest opponents of the season. They beat one of them on the road where they haven't won in 4 years. And the other one... you could say they had a little bit of help on the first goal from Pro Referees, and still came back to make that a game and throw the fear of God into DC United. So it appears the team is better, but until we get through some of these lesser opponents and see how the team handles them, we won't know for sure.
And I thought about 2-1, but I'm glad I didn't, because if we had both been right on the score 2 weeks in a row together, frankly, that would be one of the signs of the apocalypse.
I believe that is the actual seventh seal. I believe
so. Yeah.
Yes.
Then we would have busted it open, and it would have been HE double hockey sticks on Earth.
Yeah, but then Orlando City goes out a winner, so at least there's that.
There is that, and you got that going for you, which is nice.
All right, folks. That'll do it for episode 156. I think we've done about as much damage to podcasting in general as we can do for 1 week. We've set the industry back about 30 years to before there were podcasts.
And, you're welcome, everybody.
That's going to do it. You can find Dave online at Mainland Dave on Twitter. Obviously, you can find his stuff at themainland.com, his writing. And, of course, he's on this very podcast, which you can subscribe to. And you can rate us, and you can give us a review. And if you give us a 5-star rating and leave a review, we'll read it on the air. We didn't have any this week, so we're not reading any on the air. I do believe we had some ratings. I don't believe we had any reviews.
We want to read them on the air.
Yeah, we do. So, go there and help us out, and it'll help get us in front of more people. So,
and you can find Michael at Mainland Michael.
That's true. You could.
We've kept it very easy for everybody.
Yeah.
Maybe we should.
Yeah, we'll change our names, and then we'll have a contest. Who can find us on Twitter? Under our new names.
Incognito.
Yeah, I think that's what you want to do when you're on social, is you want to try not to be found.
I'm going to change mine to Rusty Ackleford.
And lock your tweets.
All right,
so we'll come back next week, Dave. We'll talk a little bit about Orlando City against the Colorado Rapids. We will talk about the Pride's final home, or the final preseason game, and obviously final home preseason game of the 2019 preseason. We'll talk about OCB and Toronto FC2. We've got U.S. Women's National Team to talk about. We're going to be getting ready for several big moments for in the coming weeks. Obviously, we've got at RSL for Orlando next week. So we'll talk about that. Of course, OCB will again be at home. The Seawolves will be wrapping up their season, and the Orlando Pride will be about to open their season for 2019 against the Portland Thorns. So. A very, very busy podcast next week, Dave.
It's the best time of the year.
Yeah, it is. If you don't count my week last week, it's probably the best time of the year.
Other than I meant next week's. Next week's
other
podcast.
Than that, Mrs. Lincoln, how was the play? That will do it for 156. On behalf of David Rowe, I'm Michael Citro, signing off the Mainland Podcast the way I always do, by saying, go City, go Pride, go OCB, go U.S. Women's National Team.